Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello and welcome to Made by Mamas, the podcast. I'm Zoe.
And I'm Georgia.
And we're here talking all things parenthood, tips and tricks,
products we love,
and brands that we can't live without. Let's get into it. I'm so full. I've eaten so much food. Happy Christmas. We survived.
We did. How was it?
Well, it was good fun.
Good.
Yeah, there were no arguments. It was lovely. We had some lovely walks. We ate a lot of turkey and some nut roast, which I said to my sister that I wanted because I was going through a sort of weird vegetarian phase.
Nut roast.
Yeah, but I ended up eating the turkey and eating the ham because I'm an absolute loser. Absolutely. What about you? All good?
All good. Yeah, absolutely.
Fine. Looking forward to New Year's Eve. What are you doing?
I'm going to be at a wedding, which is really exciting.
Is that a bit selfish?
I don't know, I think it's quite nice. I think it takes the pressure off finding something to do, don't you?
But what about if you always go to, I don't know, Edinburgh and go and watch the fireworks and then it's like, oh, well, I can't do that this year because my selfish mate's getting married. No, it is a nice thing. What a lovely thing to do.
I think it's quite nice.
I'm only joking.
And where are you?
I'm in Kenya.
Oh, that is so nice.
So my mum lives there and I haven't been out for a few years. Doz has never been, Kit's never been. And we've got 12 days over there, a few days in a hotel, then up to mum's house for a week. It's going to be lovely. I cannot wait to get there.
And is it going to be sunny?
Like, unfortunately, yeah, 35 degrees every day.
Fuck off.
I know. Georgia said fuck off. Now that is something.
Well, when it comes to sunshine and tanning,
mate,
it's appropriate.
The thing is that you know what it's like. Luckily, we're going to be at mum's house, so I feel like I might get a little bit of time to tan.
Yeah, of
and,
course you
know,
will.
Like a couple of date nights up on the roof.
Aww.
It's going to be nice. It's going to be lovely. I can't wait.
It sounds amazing.
Yeah. So I'll tell you all about that when we get back. Now, we have decided that we're going to have a couple of weeks off in January because we've been working so hard.
We are. We need a little bit of a break.
A tiny bit of a break. But don't worry, we're going to be back ASAP. But we thought, as a kind of New Year's Eve treat, we would do the best bits or some of our favourite moments from 2019.
Yeah.
In no particular order.
Exactly. It's been lovely going back and reminiscing about all the episodes because there's been so many this year.
I know, we've just kept on talking.
Yep, you might be sick of us by now. But
it's been brilliant, hasn't it? We've had so many great guests in, some hilarious, some really sad that have had us in tears. We've talked about everything, haven't we? From,
yes,
you know, all different kinds of subjects. Yeah,
exactly.
And we've loved each and every one of them. But we are going to go back, cast our minds back to the beginning of the year when we spoke to the absolutely wonderful Kimberly Walsh. So I want to sort of go back to that time when you found out you were pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
How did that make you feel in terms of your confidence?
I don't know if this is a really bad answer to this question, but when I found out I was pregnant with Bobby, so my first, I was just so happy that I didn't have to worry about dieting or anything like that for like 10 months. Is that really bad?
No.
Literally, I was about to go into like a full-on like January health kick, like thinking of doing like a full-on workout routine for the next few weeks. And then I found out I was pregnant. I was like, yes, I get out of it.
I think I was exactly the same. All the little treats that I used to walk past, like on my lunch break at work, like Selfridges Pick a Mix, I suddenly didn't have to walk past and ignore it anymore.
Like that, one for me,
go in.
One
yep.
for baby. Was there pressure during, you know, girl band days? Was there, you know, hard dieting and hard exercise that you kind of had to live by? Or was that just something that you wanted to do to look and feel good?
I think it's exactly that. I think I did probably take it on a little bit just because you are part of a girl band, five girls, so you don't kind of want to be the weak link, do you? So I felt like I did have to, you know, keep it in tow to a point, but no one ever really put any pressure on me. I think it's just like most young girls, you want to stay kind of slim and healthy. And so I kind of did what I could to stay quite, you know, quite a decent size, I would have said. But although I have to say, like, I'm not a naturally skinny person, so it does take a little bit of effort.
Does it?
Whereas the other four could literally eat McDonald's every day and they'd still be tiny.
Oh, so annoying.
That is annoying.
But yeah, you put the pressure on yourself, I think.
So when you got pregnant, it was almost like a relief.
A little bit of a relief, yeah.
And did you feel like, you know, letting loose a little bit made you feel better, or did you sort of start to feel less confident?
I just saw it as a bigger picture. I just saw it as that I was growing a human being. And so I didn't really take it on. Like, I could see my body changing. And by the end of the pregnancy with Bobby, I was huge. I mean, I was humongous. And he was a big baby. But when I look back now, I'm like, wow, my nose had doubled in size. Like, I probably did take it a little bit too far. But I had a very healthy baby. And that was the main thing. Yeah, and with Cole, I probably did chill out slightly on the eating for two thing, just because I couldn't be bothered with the regime to get back in shape.
Well, you know a little bit more, don't you, the second time round? Because you sort of know what's going to be happening to your body and the changes.
Yeah,
so you can kind of cap it slightly with the, you know, two margaritas.
Exactly.
McDonald's for breakfast.
But I think you're right. I think it was quite nice to just chill out and actually not have to think about that for a while because it was just a different thing. It was all about the baby and whether they were growing properly, and you just had to deal with how I looked, really.
Apart from the bump, what was the biggest change to your body?
Well, my bottom was basically the same size as my bump, so... slightly concerning. Literally, if I stood on the side, it was literally the same size both ways.
I thought you were going to say boobs, but you've gone for bums.
Boobs is not so bad. Like, I've got small boobs, so I think you're quite lucky in that respect, because they're small, they can't really go anywhere.
How great do they look, though, when they're full of milk? Like, I've taken so many photos, and this is a bit gross, but I've taken photographs of my boobs at, you know, when they're sort of full and they're looking great, because I just love them so much. And now I've got absolutely zero boobs. Yeah. I just look at these photos, like, longingly, like, oh, look.
They're, like, unrecognisable, though. They just don't even look right on my body. I didn't really like the big boobs.
Did you not?
Because I've spent my whole life with small boobs, and I feel like it makes you look almost smaller in general, and like my smaller part is the top of me, and so suddenly I was big there as well. I kind of preferred having smaller boobs, to be honest. So,
yeah, I wasn't a big fan of the big boobs at all. No,
just me then.
One day,
just you.
When my milk came in, my husband had been away and he went to Newcastle overnight and came back, and he literally went away with me with small boobs, came back, my milk came in, he was like, whoa! What happened to you?
No, but it is shocking, isn't it? Like, they literally triple in size. Yeah. Like, it's quite disturbing, actually. When you wake up to that, you're like, I remember saying to my friend who already had big boobs, you are in trouble, because seriously, they are massive.
And also, I mean, I'm sorry, but they just look great in bras. You know, having got small boobs, I've just never had that experience. Yes. Just having the old cleavage, like the photos that I'd send to my husband, just being check me out.
Yeah, I just feel like when you're breastfeeding, they're just not sexy boobs. No. Like, you can almost see that they're full
of milk.
Veiny boobs.
Yeah, veiny boobs.
Veiny boobs is what I've called.
So basically, don't have a boob job, just get pregnant.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what Zoe's saying, but we're not too convinced by that.
So you've had the baby, you're standing in front of the mirror, and I remember this moment for me, and obviously George and I have spoken about it as well, that first glance at your body post-baby. What's going through your head?
It's harsh, isn't it? It is really, really harsh when you're suddenly left with the same body but without the bump.
Mm.
I think I just had to laugh at the situation, really. Like, what else can you do?
Mm.
Also, you've kind of got a big distraction by trying to look after this human being that's screaming and crying and asking for help. But it is kind of hard to see at first. And then I think you just kind of, well, I just got on with it. Like, just cover up, wear slouchy clothes, deal with it, like, 6 months later. Yeah. I really did not put any pressure on myself or worry about that at all for at least 6 months.
That's
and
so
I
lovely.
Say that everybody should do that. Just give yourself at least 6 months grace.
Because it is, your body is just such an amazing thing. I mean, that whole wonder of birth and carrying the baby and growing the baby and all that sort of stuff. And then the baby comes out of you and you're standing there. And I remember just looking at my body, just going, oh my God. You know, you've got this sort of stomach which you can press, which goes in. You've got your body. You just don't feel like you're not carrying the baby anyway. It's weird, isn't it?
It is weird. And you still almost feel like it's there. It takes a while to get used to them not being in there. It's bizarre. It's almost like you want to put them back. It's very strange, strange feeling, but it's the most incredible thing.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, the minute I'd had him, I felt like I'm definitely going to want to have another one. And that's which is weird, because it wasn't the most pleasant birth, but I just definitely just thought that the feeling that I got is just insane, isn't it? You could never get that any other way, really.
So would you say that you feel more confident now that you've had your kids?
I just think that confidence, and I know this sounds a bit whatever, but I just think it's from the inside, and I'm just quite a chilled, confident person, as in, like, I'm just quite happy in my own skin. So whether I'm, whether I look bigger or I look smaller, usually I'm still kind of happy, if that makes sense. So I try not to let those sort of things affect how I feel. It's not easy, is it? But I just think it does depend on what kind of person you are.
Yeah, no, definitely. So if you're having like a bit of a rubbish day, you're feeling a bit crap, what's your go-to thing to make yourself feel better? Is it putting on a red lip, putting your hair in a bun? Like, what do you do?
If I'm having a day where I feel a little bit like on the larger side, or yeah, like I've eaten too many pies, then I'll always go towards black. I mean, it literally, it can save you so much, especially if I'm going to an event or something. I'm like, oh God, I'm going to look massive in the pictures. Wear black and you just get away with murder. It's great.
That is so true.
It is true. Yeah. Black and sleeves, just like a silhouette type outfit, and you'll get away with it. No one will see the extra half stone. I've got loads of tricks like that.
Or the greasy hair. I'm obsessed with dry shampoo. I'm like that. This makes me feel so much better.
Oh, yeah, dry shampoo.
At least my hair doesn't smell like sick.
Yeah.
I feel like my hair right now is about 100% dry shampoo. I don't really know what else is there.
It's the way forward.
I feel like, having chatted to you for the last sort of 25 minutes, that you've got this inner, like, there's this sort of inner, like, confidence and glow, isn't
yeah,
there?
Exactly. Like, it's really refreshing, actually.
Delusion.
Well, if that's what delusion is, give me some, because I quite like to be delusional.
No. I honestly, I know this sounds bad, but I just don't think I ever look at myself that deeply. Is that weird? Like, you're saying you looked in the mirror and thought, do I look sexy? I just don't remember doing that. But maybe because I've got, obviously, two, like the second time around, is I just can't remember really what happened after Cole, because Bobby was just still running around like a toddler. Like, he was two. Our routine for the first few months was usually a four in the bed scenario. Depending which one woke up, we'd just be like, oh God, just
get in,
everyone get in. Come on. And it was like laughable, you know, at times. But now it's kind of normal.
Well, you do what you need to do there.
You've got to do exactly
to get through.
Yeah, for sure.
How has your style changed since becoming a mum?
I used to wear a lot of bodycon stuff, and I don't really anymore. So that has changed, because although, like, I kind of got back to a normal, like, similar size to what I was, kind of, like, dress size-wise, I just feel like my shape, like, the width of my stomach has never, ever gone back to what it was. It's just different, like... I think once it's kind of grown that way, it probably just never would. So I used to have like quite a small waist. It's still, you know, the smallest part of me. But I'm not like, let me just throw on a bodycon skin tight dress and walk, you know,
bit more casual
around. I'm a little bit more like, yeah, sort of slightly more baggy. Still always draw everything to the waist though, because that's my smallest point.
So if you want to feel good, what do you wear apart from black?
I love a jumpsuit, a waisted jumpsuit. They're always really comfortable, easy to wear, and you just don't need to think too much about piecing the outfit together, which is good if you're in a rush.
Yeah.
Anything waisted, really. Just not too tight. Not too skin tight anymore.
Yeah, nice.
And a good old Spanx dress is always a good thing in the wardrobe. I've got like literally drawers and drawers of various different types of elasticated products, but just like, I find that all you really need is like just a slip, like a stretchy slip. I can't be dealing with the Spanx thing anymore. No. It's not really a great look, because it's going to bulge somewhere else.
Yeah.
Whereas the slips are just quite good, give you a nice silhouette.
Nice hourglass.
Yeah. Ah, oh, we love that woman.
Yeah, she's lovely, isn't she? She's one of those really warm people.
And I love watching what she's done this year, because she's been in Big and she's been Super Mom, and I've got a feeling, a sneaky feeling, that they're going to do a Girls Aloud reunion tour next year. Because did you see Cheryl's post the other day?
Yes, yeah.
So if
please,
that happens...
Kimberly, let us know.
Yeah, and also, Kimberly, happening. If you're listening to this, which of course you will be, you come back on with Shezza.
Yes, please.
Yes.
Everyone, message Cheryl to say, tell her that she's got to come on the Made by Mamas podcast.
I would love to chat to that woman.
Me too. Yes. Definitely.
So who have we got next?
Katie Impey. It was a sad one, but a really great chat, and I think I think it helped a lot of people from the messages that we had.
Yeah, we had so many messages, didn't we, after the conversation? And it was, like you said, it was very hard to not tap into her raw grief because it was here in the room with us, and you know you couldn't escape it. Even you,
exactly,
got really emotional
about
it.
And I did.
She was so strong and brave, and yeah, it was one of my favourite chats of the year, definitely.
Yeah, me too.
It became apparent quite quickly that it was terminal, and then over the space of 9 months, she just, things went from bad to worse, really, and she passed away in April of this year. So it's when I reflect on the last 12 months, it almost seems like a bad dream. It's like, how can life change so drastically, you know, in such a short space of time? It doesn't seem real at times, but unfortunately it is, and we're living it. So.
What was that moment like for you as her daughter, finding out that she had terminal cancer?
Shocking and terrifying. She's had cancer before. She had breast cancer just before she turned 40, so I was in my teens. And so it's always a kind of like a dark cloud that had hung over us,
that
the C word, and I'd had my own cancer scare the year before. I'd had precancerous cells on my cervix, which seemed really scary at the time, and now on reflection, it's, you know.
Was that when you went for a smear?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and they came back abnormal, but they were quite advanced, so I had to have surgery, I had to have part of my cervix removed, and that was terrifying. And I just remember thinking, oh my God, it's come to get me. You know, kind of have always lived with that fear. We had the BRCA gene test because my mum had breast cancer under 40, and her mum actually died. She was 29 when, so my grandmother was 29 when she died of breast cancer. So my mum was 4 when she lost her mum. So it's always been a big part of our lives. And then to find out that actually we'd had these kind of checkups every year after her being in remission from the breast cancer, 15 years ago. And then to find out that actually she'd had this kidney cancer for at least 7 years.
No. Did that make you feel quite angry?
It's something that I've had to put in a box, because if I address that anger, will really rile me and make me feel irrational thoughts, and so I've very much had to box that away. We found out after she was diagnosed that they'd missed the tumour. She'd had a scan. She'd been having persistent urinary infections, and she was 61 by this point.
So young, though.
They just dismissed it, the sweats and the tiredness and the kind of just that unwell feeling that she couldn't put her finger on, as the menopause. And then it was only this one amazing GP that had the foresight to look back over her records, and she was like, hang on a minute, these urine infections are so persistent. And then she went so far back that she saw this. She said, oh, you had a scan in 2011 and it showed a mass. My mum was like, oh, I can't remember, you know. Lots happens in those 7 years. She became a grandmother. You know, you think what happens in the space of 7 years, life in general, the trips that you take, the jobs, you know, whatever. That scan actually showed the start of a tumour, which went undetected. And by the time it was diagnosed in August of last year, it was stage 4. It spread to her lungs. The original source was her left kidney. It spread to her right kidney. And the tumour that was around 3 centimetres in 2011 was over 11 centimetres. It was bigger than the kidney itself.
Oh, my God.
So it was like, bam, bam. It was just so much. And it just kind of went from bad to worse, really.
And was there no hope? The diagnosis was terminal, that was it.
Well, with kidney cancer, it's always terminal. So you can't treat it with conventional cancer treatment, so it doesn't respond to chemo. There's obviously lots of research and there are some really innovative treatments out there. But because my mum's had progressed to the stage that it was, it was really a case of just containing it as much as they could and prolonging her life as much as possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that was the hope. but she had surgery to have the kidney removed in the August. She just never really recovered from that surgery.
Right.
It was almost like we'd rattled the hornet's nest. Yeah. You know, it's like it'd been laid kind of dormant and undetected. And really, considering how widespread the cancer was, she'd lived such a normal... I mean, we were in Ibiza the week before she was diagnosed, dancing at a beach club, drinking mojitos.
Wow.
You know, I remember joking that we invited them to join us on our holiday so my husband and I could, you know, have a bit of party time in Ibiza. And this one particular night, my mum and dad wouldn't go home. They were the ones dancing. I was like, come on, guys, you know.
You're here for us.
This is our time.
Exactly. And she just, like, had so much life in her. So it was just shocking. And I think the thing with cancer is it's a cruel disease in so many ways, but in some ways it prepares you at every stage. So you think that you can't, how are you going to live through this? How are you going to get through this? And at some point you adjust and that becomes the new normal. And then you get hit with another wave of bad news. And then at some stage you adjust to that and that becomes the new normal. And at every stage, you know, my dad was a typical man and, you know, he's never made a bed or loaded the dishwasher or done any of those things. And as my mum's as the disease progressed and she got more and more poorly, he just took more and more on and became just, you know, it taught him a lot of life lessons. And now he's kind of able to do things that he would never have been able to do if it had been a sudden thing. He would have literally just been sat there going, where does this go?
We were talking about this earlier on and I was saying in the chat before you came in that obviously when I lost my dad, it was a pulmonary embolism, so a blood clot in the leg just shot straight to his lungs, so there wasn't a chance to say goodbye. And actually I was in Ibiza and I couldn't get on a flight and he died almost instantly. So my mum was left with that reality of kind of, what do I do now? You know, it's that feeling. But I guess, you know, with an illness, there isn't, it, one way isn't better or worse.
No.
Do you know what I mean? They both bring absolute horrors and traumas.
Ultimately, you're left to live the rest of your lives without that person.
Exactly.
And in some ways, the cancer is cruel because you see it taking that, you know, it damaged my mum more emotionally than it did physically. I mean, she changed so much mentally,
right?
And that I found the hardest thing to cope with. But then we were able to get used to the idea. We were able to do things when we were eventually told that she had weeks. You know, the cancer had spread beyond any. You know, they trialed her on this treatment called immunotherapy, which is really groundbreaking in terms of kidney cancer, and I know that it's really successful for a lot of people, but it was obviously just too little too late for my mum. But we were able to have 4 amazing weeks. I got married.
Yeah, I was gonna ask you, what do you do? That was my were you gonna say
the
same thing?
I was gonna say, how do you go about sort of making those weeks the best that they can possibly be?
So, you know, you never you don't ever want to be faced with that prospect, but I guess when you're in that, then you just have to make every day count as much as you can, really. I had a message from somebody on Instagram just this week, actually, saying that she'd was going through something similar. Her mum been diagnosed with cancer and it was terminal and that she only had a few months left, and, you know, she feels lost. And my advice to anybody going through that is to just be grateful for the here and now and live in the here and now. Like, I tried not to allow myself to get too upset during her illness because I knew that at some point she wasn't going to be around and I would have the rest of my life to cry and be sad. And I didn't want to waste a single day of her being here feeling sad. So, you know, I was just so grateful that every day that we had her, and even on the rubbish days and she was really sick and it was really tough to see her like that, I was just glad that she was there.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just, you just, no matter whether it's days, weeks, months, you just have to live for the grab now. Hold don't, of it, don't you? Look too far ahead.
Yeah, and obviously, scary. Your children are really young. So, especially Lottie. So, how did you go about sort of telling them, explaining to them what was going on, or did you not?
So, we didn't tell. We didn't really tell Lottie anything.
Well, she was what, two at the time?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Isabella had a particularly close relationship with my mum beyond the usual grandmother, granddaughter. I mean, Isabella since described my mum as a second mum. And they formed an especially close bond from like the moment she was born. My mum was in the room with me when I had her. She was literally like business end on a stool, like head in front of the midwives. And she was the first person to see Isabella. Like she could see her head coming out. Gruesome.
that moment that we don't want to think about.
Yeah,
yet.
That one.
Yeah.
The one that I definitely didn't want my husband to see. So yeah, they had an especially close relationship. So I was really conscious. I didn't want to frighten her because I was terrified. We were all terrified. And I didn't want her to live with that, the fear that I was feeling, unless it was completely necessary. And then obviously once we knew that she'd had the surgery, but the cancer had spread and it was terminal, we decided to tell her. But we were going to tell her together over a weekend. But I remember it was half term. So I'd had her with me and we'd been to the farm with friends. And when we got back to the car park, put the girls in the car, and it was my friend who was over from Ibiza. And she was like, oh, you know, put the kids in the car. She's like, how's your mum? Because she knew that the girls didn't know. And I said, oh, not good. And da-da-da-da-da. Sort of had a little chat with her. And when I got in the car, Isabella said to me, why do you keep talking about Nanny and you don't tell me? And I just thought, I need to tell you. And she just looked at me. She said, has she got cancer?
No.
And I was like, oh, my God. And I thought, anything I say other than yes is going to be a lie. Mm. So I just had to have the conversation with her, and it was horrific. I remember driving and, like, she was sobbing. She was crying. She was screaming for her... Oh, God. She was crying for her dad. And I just felt awful because I couldn't... You can't protect them from that. That is the truth. Mm. And she's... very intelligent, she's very mature, and she deserved to know the truth. But after that, she handled it really, really well, and was very brave. We had another wobble when my mum started to have it spread to my mum's brain by November. So she started to have radiotherapy, and it meant that she lost her hair. So that was something.
So that was a visible thing, yes. That Isabella had to deal with, and you could see, you can see it.
So that was she found that really difficult, and it was something that my mum was terrified of. She didn't want Isabella to see her differently. And we went down the wig route. It's so funny because Lottie loves playing hairdressers, and she was doing she usually does my mum's hair, but obviously my mum didn't have any hair. But she had a wig that she kept in the spare room upstairs on like a little wig stand. And Lottie, instead of doing my mum's hair, was doing my dad's. And then Lottie said, oh, Nanny, it's your turn now. And my mum said, oh, but Nanny hasn't got any hair. She said, yes, she has. It's upstairs in the bedroom. I'll go and get it. So I think, and she's very, that kind of blatant, like, say what you see attitude, she will walk into a room and say, my nanny died. And it's like, but it's, that's just facts. And she doesn't carry any emotional connection to it. It's something that's happened. And I don't think she has any emotion with that yet. She's three.
Yeah.
But she will say, we've got like a glass, like a panoramic roof in the car. And she'll go, well, she'll just be in the car and wave through the roof and be like, hello, Nanny. Nanny's in the sky. And she will talk so openly about it, whereas Isabella is much more of a closed book. And we've had a few moments with her where she's been acting out since my mum died, and which is really out of character for her. And when I've pushed her on it, she says it's because she's angry.
Angry.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, of course.
Which hurts me so much because she's the kindest little girl. So to think that that beautiful little soul feels anger, oh, God, it breaks my heart.
She was brilliant, wasn't it? It's such a real subject that so many of us are facing. Mm. She spoke so well.
It just blows my mind that we don't talk about it more. You know, when people die, we have the funeral or the wake or the cremation, and then we don't talk about them anymore.
No.
And then when people do talk about their grief, some people find it really uncomfortable, and they're kind of like, oh, it'll be okay. It's like, no, it will be okay, but I actually just feel really, really, really shit, and I need to talk about my dead dad.
Exactly. Yeah, you want to talk. Exactly. No, it was fantastic.
She was wonderful.
Thank you so much,
yeah,
Katie,
we love Katie.
That with us.
Right, up next, it's without a doubt the podcast that has had the most messages from this year.
It was unbelievable, actually.
Wasn't it?
Yeah.
We've hailed it the podcast that every parent needs to listen to feel sane.
Yes. Chris and Rose from Expect the Best.
We give lots of families this tool called a wow board. So a wow board is you just make a sign, pop it up at home with a photo of everybody that lives in the house. You can put the dog, the cat, whatever you want on there. And anytime, especially at two, you celebrate everything. A child does something that's amazing, literally goes and picks their own shoes up. You put it on the wow board and you're like, that's a wow moment. Everyone does a wow dance and it's like, yay. And it's like, find what's mummy done today? Oh, mummy hasn't opened the wine until six. Yay. You know, like, make it a big thing. And what you're starting to build up is this positive reinforcement that gets them to do what you want them to do. So when it comes to the coat, be like, do you remember those lovely wows you got? This is a wow moment. How quickly can you get that coat on? They'll do it because they want to impress you.
Right.
And so it's about like building this up, and it's worked a lot, and it's all about just positive and nothing negative, which is what we want to try and achieve.
And I think just touching on, you know, just expanding on the wow board, the really important thing about the wow board is that nothing can be taken away from it. So it's not like, say, you do a marble jar and then they can have a marble taken away for doing something, you know, that you are an unwanted behavior. A wow board is just, so they may do, I don't know, 10 in your eyes terrible things that day, but that they've also done 5 amazing things, and those are always there for you to see and for them to see and for those to be celebrated.
So what do we do? How do we put it on the board? Am I being silly?
No.
Just like a sticky note.
Yeah, so like you do sticky notes, you can pop it on your fridge, you know, you can get a big piece of paper and divide it into 4 and then have like pictures of everyone. And you know, even with like a young baby, you can get them to come up, you know, with things for the young baby that they've done that's amazing. And it ends up being quite a joke with parents. Like, you go into houses and you see like mum and dad have put their own wows on like after a big night or something. It's quite funny. And it's just
mum and dad survived the day.
Yeah, but that is a wow. But isn't that a wow that you survived the day, you know, like parenting, looking after your children on a hangover or any day?
Yeah.
That is something to celebrate. So it's about what it does, it puts into your mindset as parents celebrating all those little wins, because we often overlook those with children because we're so busy and going through our day and we're like, we need to do this, we need to get out, we do that. We never really stop to actually, they're really little and they've achieved quite a lot today. Let's celebrate that.
Yeah.
So that's the point of the wow board, and it just helps, you know, enforce good behaviour.
Another good point of it is that if one of you works, or maybe both of you work, and you have someone who comes in and looks after them or whatever it is, you know, they're always there for you to talk through them at the end of the day.
So they can talk to you and say, Mummy, look what I did today.
Yeah, Mummy, look what I did today. I did all of these wow things. And so it's a great thing for if you're working or, you know,
you've missed parts of it and you want to be included.
That's such a nice idea. So say, obviously, with a coat, we'll use that as an example. Say, you know, they haven't taken to the wow moment that day and they're having a full-on meltdown, which we've all had, haven't we? All of us have seen that. What do you do? Because sometimes I will beg, please stop, or I'll tell him off, or sometimes I try and be nice.
Sometimes I fake cry.
I do that.
You're making mommy really sad.
Yeah.
What's the right thing?
Yeah, what should we be doing? I just don't know.
There isn't really a right answer to this sort of situation. I think it all depends, like when we talk about managing expectations, we talk about managing yours and a child's expectations. So if they've woken up and you can, you know, when you feel it's one of those days, the cloud is over, let's just lower those expectations down for the day. You know, can you get your coat and put it on? It's probably going to turn into a battle. Whereas if you got the coat and put it on for them, it's not. Does that make sense?
And sort of making sure you're asking those kind of things. So like, would you like me to help you? Kind of providing, again, a good opportunity for those like options. Like, so today, would you like me to help you with your coat? Is that fun? Like, I'll help you. Today, yeah. I'll help you. And then other days, it's like, so you're kind of...
trying to gauge where your toddler is.
Exactly.
Or your three-year-old is.
Yeah, exactly. So, and that's kind of part of managing our expectations and part of like understanding that sometimes it's okay to help. I think we quite often we want them to get their shoes on, get their coat on, get this on, get that, you know, hat, scarf, whatever it is. And that's a lot of things that you're kind of getting your child to do and just expecting them to do it beautifully every single time. You know, there are some times where it's going to be where they will do it.
Yeah. But if it's got to the point where it's stratospheric, because I think a lot of parents will be going, can you help me in this? Like you two, we're looking at you for help here because it's happening a lot in my house. And I'll just tell you what I'm doing and you can tell me if there's something that you think I should be doing differently.
Yeah.
So let's take Luna, for example, where she's got this thing where she's just incessantly repeating stuff. It's like she wants my attention. She's saying stuff. I'm trying to have a conversation with Isla. She then screams out loud so that she's like so that I then look at her because she's desperate for me to look at her. And then when I say, Luna, will you just wait please, I'm talking to Isla, she bursts into tears. She then hits Isla or does something that's really naughty on purpose, and I say to her, if you do that again, I'm going to put you down in your room. Because that's what we're trying to do, is separate her. She'll do it again where she'll hit Isla or she'll do something. I have to take her down, put her in the room, shut the door. She goes absolutely insane. Mm-hmm. And I only leave her in there for about 40 seconds. It's not like it's 4 hours. And then I go in, I try and calm her down and then try and have a conversation with her and bring her back down. She then apologizes to everybody, but I feel that moment where I shut the door on her, she hates it. But I don't know what else, I don't know where else to take her. People say don't take them to their bedrooms, that's supposed to be their safe place, not a place to punish them. So I just don't know. And if she is completely having a meltdown, and that's happened before, I've got her I have to physically pick her up and say to her, enough now, and she's fighting and there's and physicality, and I just put her in her room and shut the door and leave her.
Okay, so first off, what I would do is, in that kind of situation, is because she's trying to make herself heard, then everything after that is like a desperate, how much more attention can I get in this situation? So what I would do is, for a couple of times, you get right down to her level, look at her, ask her, you know, hold her hands, get her to look in your eyes, and just say, Mummy hears that you want to tell me something, but Mummy's having a conversation at the moment with somebody else. When I have finished that, I will hear what you have to say. I'm really looking forward to hearing what you have to say, but I need to finish this first. And then say to her, if you still feel like you want to stand here and wait, that's fine. Why don't you put your hand on my leg so that I know that you're there and that I remember that you've got something that you want to tell me, and then I will get back to you. And then, you know, for a while, what I would do is I'd leave that time before you then listen to her to be really short, and then you can slowly start to extend that time.
Okay.
And then just go, thank you so much for waiting. So say it's only like 30 seconds and it's...
Or even, you know, 5 seconds.
Even so 5 seconds. Yeah. Actually, 30 seconds is quite a long time. Yeah, even if it's just 5 seconds and she's just quieting down for that 5 seconds, then you can go, right, Mummy's ready to listen to what you have to say. And just slowly start to build that up more and more so that she's kind of breaking that cycle of, I have to shout at you in order for you to give me all of that attention.
Yeah.
And actually, it's sometimes such a powerful thing to say to a child, is that I hear you. I know that you want me.
They're desperate to be heard. And then you can make that into a wow moment. You really waited for Mummy then. That's amazing. Well done. Like, let's put that on the wow board, you know. And like Rose says, you build it up and build it up. You are going to have those times when she just loses it. And that happens. And if you choose to put her in her room for her to calm down or whatever, that is completely not wrong. She is your child. You parent how you want to parent. And there is no right or way answer to deal with a child when they're losing it and you're all flustered and stuff and you've got other children in the house and the shopping man is like delivering something. Yep. It's all going on, you know. I've been there. You're literally moving screaming children out the way because you've got someone coming in the house and stuff. And it's unfortunately, it's just life. But just don't let yourself feel guilty about that.
And I also think it's important to understand like what's going on behind that screaming. So sometimes I think we can think that by making our children wait and listen to what we're saying to something else or whatever, we kind of see that scream as, oh my goodness, maybe I'm ignoring them and
they don't. Yeah, that's how I felt.
Yeah, but actually what that is just, it's just frustration. And I think we're quite scared of children getting angry because we feel, because children will often, you know, they have such a huge reaction. But that's the great thing about children, is because their emotions are so up and down, and they have to learn how to rationalize their emotions. Because as adults, we've learned coping mechanisms for each of our emotions and, you know, how we deal with that. But a child, we've got to teach them how to do that. And yeah. I think sometimes that's quite difficult to remember, that they're just angry. And how they show us they're angry is by screaming and shouting. It's not necessarily something that you're doing wrong.
Yeah, because I guess no one likes to wait, right? Yeah, but we've learned that we have to wait.
Yeah.
Right? So I guess is it just teaching them that they have to wait sometimes?
Yeah, and by doing that, you just start off slowly.
Yeah.
Really get down to their level. And I think sometimes it's, you can interrupt your conversation that you're having with someone in order to tell your child that they have to wait. But try and get it before the point where they've started kind of getting really angry about it.
I think
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's very tricky when you've got, and I'm sure, again, parents that will be listening to this will agree with that, when you've got an older sibling like Isla who wants to tell me all about her holiday, who I've not seen for 10 days. Mm. And yeah. Isla's trying to desperately tell me she went to Waddy, to the water park, and then we went here and we went out on a banana boat, and Luna's going, mummy, 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 mummy. And then I'm just like, shut up. Stop saying mummy at me. I can't cope with this. Yeah. My brain is going to explode. Yeah. I've already told you I'm talking to your sister, and then Kit slamming something down on his behind. Yeah. Like the whole thing I mean, it's like you're being hacked. It's like, I feel like a computer being hacked. Mm. And then I shout at her, and then I feel awful at the moment because I just feel like I'm completely failing.
You're not failing.
I do exactly the same. I said the other day on Instagram, I told Axel my name wasn't Mummy.
My God.
I was like, my name isn't Mummy. It's Georgia. And then he started calling me Georgia. And then we went to the football on Saturday, and everyone was going, Daddy, Daddy. And Axel was going, James, James. I was like, oh no.
I think in that instance, you know, like with Isla and having an older one, and she's desperate to tell you stuff, like if it's really one of those things where you're like, Jesus Christ, my head's going to explode, just say to Isla, I really want to hear again everything you're telling me. Why don't, you know, I'm going to come back to you. Let me just do this. And I know it feels like you're taking that time away. Be like, but you know, you can say, we can have some special time later, and you can really tell me all about this, or get Luna involved with that. I think we had this, you know, as Rose is saying, we're like the managing the expectations. We forget that there are going to be days when the children are like that and you're like that, but we have this expectation that they have to be perfect all the time, and they're just human like us. They wake up in such a bad mood as well. And it's trying to remember that. And I know that's really difficult, but also just knowing that she doesn't mean it, and it's not going to go forever. Like, you know, what do you always say? I always forget.
The only constant in life is change.
I know.
Chris and Rose from Expect the Best, the people that I have on speed dial. Do you know how many times I call them during the week?
They're probably going to block you soon.
There is a chance I'm not going to be able to have their phone number. But like, I feel so lucky that we've got them in our lives, because they speak so much sense. They really talk our language, and they just know so much.
Yeah. Some of the techniques that they shared in that episode, I'm still using now. And I've really, really believe that they've made such a difference in Axel's behaviour.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I mean, Rose was literally going to come out to the house about 2 weeks ago, just before Christmas. And because of the episode, actually, and what I took from it, and my conversations with Luna, everything has changed. And I said, look, do you know what? We're actually having a really good period. I don't need you. But I still love you.
Yeah, we do. Chris and Rose never, ever, ever go away.
Now, this episode was really special because this is the episode that we packed our bags and went out to Essex for.
We did.
Your neck of the woods.
Up the road for me. Five minutes round the corner.
My trip's 2 hours around the M25. But it was worth it because the wonderful Stacey Solomon invited us into her home. And what a woman she is.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Let's talk about this pregnancy. Congratulations. I just kind of want to know, you know, kind of, you know, was baby planned and was that, how was that conversation with Joe and kind of like, I guess, the infancy of when you guys started to think about having a baby together?
Yes. We planned for this baby for quite a long time. Probably about 2 years we were talking about it before we decided to go ahead. Because we've got children already, they are our absolute priority. And we just wanted to make sure they were completely settled and ready for a whole new dynamic. That's why I think I've waited so long in between. I mean, my youngest is seven. Mm. So I really wanted to obviously be completely sure that it was the right time and that everyone was happy for things to change. Because it will change inevitably. So yeah, we were planning for a good 2 years, I would say, and then we started trying. Yeah, so it was something that we were making a real conscious effort to do because we really, really wanted to expand our families.
Mm. I can see, having sort of stepped in the room, that the boys are a total priority for you. Uh-huh. You know, they're such great kids already. How are you feeling about getting back into the mix and having a newborn? Because the boys are pretty much self-sufficient, right?
I know, well, just made you some, one of them just made you some toast. I mean, I think I'd be pretty happy.
That is why I had children, so that they could make my breakfast for me. No, do you know what? I have incredible boys. Joe and I have incredible children. And I'm so grateful that they are so lovely and brilliant and helpful, and just they make my life so much easier, and they're brilliant. I am in two minds, I think, about having another baby. Obviously this is what we want and we're really excited and elated to be going through this, but also there's definitely moments when I think, oh, it's been the three of us, as in me, Zachary and Layton, for such a long time. Mm. It is quite daunting to think that whole trio will soon be four and it will be completely different. And I don't know, little things like I was holding their hands the other day and I just thought, I don't have another hand, I only have two hands, and I don't want to let go of my oldest one. It's just the weirdest stuff. It's just silly things. I mean, the baby isn't going to be holding my hand for a good year or two. And Zach is 11 and probably is sick of holding my hand.
That's so, a good transition. When he goes to secondary school, doesn't want to hold your hand, you'll have another hand.
It's irrational, but I definitely have those moments where I'm like, oh, it's quite sad. It's the end of an era, I guess. Yeah. And I think that is quite a big thing. Mm. And I didn't think about that prior to being pregnant. I've only thought about it sort of now, coming up to the end.
Are you finding yourself having sort of more special times with them, or kind of making more time to do things with both of them? Is there a sense of nostalgia?
Definitely. I've been trying to take them out individually as well to get some real alone time with both of the boys. You know, Zach's been a big brother for 7 years. Layton's never been on his own as a sibling. So I'm trying to sort of get in those times where I really let them know that I'm there if they need me and I'm theirs and they can have me to themselves. So I don't have to spread myself thin. They've got me. So I'm sort of really making a conscious effort. I don't know if they're enjoying it, to be honest.
What's all this extra time with mum? Yeah. I don't want that.
Oh, God. This is annoying.
My eldest calls me a smother because he's like, you just smother me. You're all over. You're a smother mother from some TV show, I think. So I'm sure that they're not ecstatic about how much time I want to spend.
I did it with Luna.
When I knew
that, you know, when Kit was when the birth was approaching and I was reaching full term, I just went into this very emotional state of looking at Luna and constantly constantly wanting to hug her and constantly wanting to touch her and tell her that I loved her. And I was crying endlessly because I felt like I was taking away the bond between her and I. And I think it's a very natural feeling to be like, you know, you don't want anything to change, but you know that it is going to change and you want it to change, but it's all very confusing.
It is really confusing. And also I think Leighton's at an age, my youngest, where he's transitioning into from being a small young child into an older child. And obviously when I first got pregnant, he'd just turned six and now he's seven. Well, he was six and now he's seven. And I know that doesn't sound like a massive change, but for me, I've really noticed a change in him, and it's actually been difficult to let him go and become a grown-up child. So I was still carrying him, you know, if we went on a really long day out, I'd bring the buggy and chuck him in there and let him go to sleep and stuff. And I haven't been able to carry him obviously since I've been pregnant and cut and pick him up and take him up to bed and all of those things that kept him my little one have stopped happening. And I think that has been really emotional, sort of letting him go and him becoming an older child.
But has he done that by that himself, or do you think it's been a conscious thing?
He has noticed a change, because he said to me, oh mummy, you haven't carried me since you started growing our baby. And so he's definitely noticed that I can be less hands-on with him because we're having another baby.
Does he say growing our baby?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's how I've probably brainwashed him to say it.
I love that.
But and so I take him swimming a lot now. That's my like guilt easer. Yeah. I take him swimming loads so I can put him on my, like round my waist and wrap him around and carry him around the pool.
That's lovely.
So he feels like he's getting a carry. It's so silly.
No, it's
I mean, come on, it really is.
He's been your baby.
It literally breaks my heart every time, especially at the moment. Axel's like, mummy, pick me up. And I'm like, oh, I really can't. So I've actually started holding him like on my back.
Yeah, piggyback.
Yeah,
and then I'm like, is it safe? Am I doing the right thing? But then, you know what? You just got to do what you got to do, haven't you?
Yeah, I know.
And it is, you want to be considerate and you just want to do the right thing. And ultimately, as parents, all you want to do is your children to know that they're unconditionally loved and you'll always be there. So I guess that's all you can do. We will beat ourselves up till the cows come home. Otherwise, it's just not. I have to constantly remind myself that it's not worth the guilt.
Yeah,
it really isn't.
Right.
I'm doing a great job. We're all doing a great job. We're blooming well, doing whatever we can to give our children the best life that they could possibly have in whatever way that is. We're doing our best, and I think that is all you can do, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's such a lovely message to send out to parents as well, that guilt emotion, it's just not worth it. You can't, because whatever you do, you're going to beat yourself up about it. You're going to think it's not good enough, but actually, like you said, we're just trying to get through, survive and do the best by our kids.
I mean, the thing is you're going to feel it, so you have to accept it and go, okay, I'm going to at times feel like I'm not doing the best, or I could have, or I should have, or I would have, but it's not productive. It's not going to get me anywhere. It's not going to make me any of a better parent. I'll accept it and I'll go, okay, I feel a bit guilty today and I feel a bit rubbish, but I won't let it consume me, because I know ultimately my intentions are always good.
Yeah.
You know, even if I get something completely wrong, I've gone in there with the right intentions. I'm not trying to, you know, mess up my kids. I'm trying to do the right thing. Yeah. So you've got to give yourself a blooming break at some point.
And talking about your emotions, you've obviously spoken very openly about your, I guess, anxieties and your fears. How have they been this pregnancy? And, you know, have they kind of reared their ugly head, I guess?
Yeah. I mean, hormones for me do not help with my mental state of mind. It's just, they go hand in fueling one another. As soon as I get extra estrogen or progesterone, I'm literally anxiety central. But again, you know, I've tried really hard not to wish my pregnancy away, because I don't know if I'll have any more children.
Yeah.
So I want to enjoy it. I'm lucky enough to be pregnant again, so I don't want to wish it away, but I do find it very difficult. The imbalances in hormones, the changes in hormones, I find mentally very difficult.
And have you had that with all three of your pregnancies?
Yeah, all of them. Yeah. I would say that later, my middle was probably my most stable, where I was definitely more... wow, everything's so shiny and wonderful. But Zachary and this one, I would say my fear, you know, that parent fear. I don't know if anyone else gets this, but when I had Zach, I got like a parent fear of, immediately I just felt responsible for a human being.
Yeah.
And I felt that if anything happened to me, what would my child do? And it really accelerated this whole new anxiety thing that I'd never, ever felt before. And that was at 17. I felt a bit more stable as life went on and I didn't keel over and die, that I trusted that maybe that wasn't going to happen, you know.
So this is a fear of dying?
Yeah, I think it's the fear of leaving my children without somebody. I think as a single parent as well, you feel that a lot more. Maybe you don't, you know, because when I was in a relationship and I had Leighton, I still felt that, but it was less.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think
it's natural that you would feel it more if you feel like you're on your own.
I don't know. Definitely. It's just that maybe I'm like, I just cannot leave them. And also, selfishly, I don't want to leave them. I want to enjoy them for the rest of my life. You know, all of those things, those dark thoughts that you can usually sort of go, oh, don't think about that. I was unable to when I had Zach. And I think the vulnerability of labour and giving birth and going through that trauma made me feel like my body wasn't a superhero. I think throughout my teenage years, I felt like I was invincible.
Yeah.
And labour was like, oh, I'm definitely not invincible. That was.
And also, yeah, I guess at 17, you wouldn't have like heard too many stories about it. Like, no. You know, as we get older, we've got loads of friends who've had babies. Yes. And we know what we're going to go through and we're a bit more prepared for it. But I guess when you're a lot younger, you wouldn't have had that.
But also, I think 10 years ago, 11 years ago, things were really, really different. People didn't want to tell you those stories. Now we have podcasts and we have Loose Women and we had Loose Women then, but people didn't want to hear those kind of details about birth because they don't want to scare people. I think a lot of it comes from a really good place. They didn't want anyone to feel, you know, anxious or nervous going into labour. What's the point in that? But there wasn't very much awareness about what happens and the different scenarios and someone's going to have their hands up your vagina.
And you don't want them to.
And you're probably going to crap
on
them.
I don't want to know that. I already know that. I don't want to remind myself.
Like, they're not the things that people spoke about when I had Zach. So yeah. I did go into it completely blind. My advice was, it's painful, but it'll all be amazing in the end. You'll forget about it and you'll get this overwhelming feeling of love and wonder when it comes out.
What did happen?
Oh, I just wanted toast and I didn't even want to see my baby. When I had Zach, I was in labour for a good 3 days. I went 2 weeks over.
Wow.
In the end, they gave me a spinal to take me down to theatre, but the anaesthetist wasn't around. He had to go to an emergency. So they forceps Zach out, cut me like every which way and forceps him out. And I don't even remember them stitching me up and all of that stuff. I remember them trying to give me the baby and I was like, no, I'm hungry because I couldn't eat anything for quite some time because they'd put the drip in me. Yep. And then they left me because it was 23:32. I remember the exact time. It was 23:32 and then everyone had to leave as soon as I gave birth because back then they didn't let anyone stay overnight with you, not even your mum.
Not even your partner?
No. Well, my partner, we weren't together. So there was, no one was allowed on the ward.
I can't believe they didn't let your mum stay.
Yeah.
That is terrible.
So I was left in like, and you're in curtains, aren't you?
Yeah.
So you're sort of just left hearing everyone else's babies crying and yours is crying. And I was just like, numb from the waist down. I couldn't go to the toilet. Or I thought I couldn't, but I was. Just all in myself. And then woke up without the epidural or spinal or whatever it was they gave me and was like, ah.
What were the months like after that?
I would say for a good 3 months, it's really fuzzy. I don't actually remember very much because I think my brain blocked out that the aftermath was the trauma for me. Even though the birth was the trauma, the aftermath I think was even worse. Sort of like my mum used to come round and help me with my stitches and I couldn't sit down for quite some time and but then I couldn't stand up because I was so weak. It was a really weird time.
Yeah. Mm.
And I didn't have any feelings towards my baby, which sounds really horrible.
No,
and
no,
I
we hear that a lot, actually.
Yeah, we
talk about it a lot.
I hate saying it because me and Zach have had the conversation and because he's older now, I feel that I can sit and talk to him and explain to him things like that. And I feel that I have to because I've been so open about my experiences. I wouldn't want him to read it online or his friends to say it. And that makes me feel horrendous. So, yeah, we've had those conversations and I just didn't feel anything. Mm. And I don't think I felt anything for anyone, not particularly just the baby, just for life, for anything, you know, when you're just sort of numb. And it took quite some time before my mum said to me, you know what, go away. So she sent me, not sent me away, but she said, go away, go and spend some time with your friends when he was about 3 months old and remember who you are and what you were before you were pregnant and had a baby and teenage mum and whatever, and then come back because I was starting back at college in September. And it was that sort of like leaving the home and leaving the baby that was the only thing that got me to remember who I was and to be able to actually face what had happened and to become the parent that I needed to become for Zachary. So it really was.
So what did you do in that time? Where did you go? Did you...
So my friends, me and my friends went to COS. I think it was like the cheapest place we could go to at the time. And yeah, we went for like 4 or 5 days. I can't even remember now. And just went mad and silly and got drunk and went out and yeah. And I remembered what it was like to be a teenager again. Yeah, you know, I'd spent like my 18th birthday as a pregnant, breastfeeding, like, or whatever I was. It just wasn't what I expected.
I think that actually happens at, well, it can happen at any age.
Yeah, so
that you have this really big life that you're leading, and then you have a baby, and nobody really prepares you for that aftermath. Like, I went a very similar birth to you, and you know, it was a real trauma for me, and I suddenly felt like I was grieving the loss of my life, and I was like, I don't know who I am now as a mother. I don't know what I like. I don't know how to sleep. I'm not eating properly. I'm supposed to have this overwhelming sense of love, and I don't know Luna. You know, I felt quite similar to you. I really did struggle with it. And it's actually, nobody really prepares you for that moment. No. You're just supposed to get on with it because you're now a mother. But it actually, sometimes it doesn't click like that for certain people.
No, and you're right. It can happen at any time. I've interviewed so many women who have had the perfect setups and been in horrible situations or been in great situations, and it doesn't, your circumstances aren't relevant, your age isn't relevant, mental health is mental health, and it has no, you know, it takes no prisoners. And I think that there's not anyone who can just fly under the radar, oh, they're in this circumstance, so they'll be fine.
And sometimes when you are in the stereotypically perfect, you know, scenario, you feel even worse.
Yeah.
Because you think, I've got absolutely no reason to not be enjoying this. Mm. This is meant to be perfect. To the outside world, this should be perfect. Yeah. And then when it's not, it can be so much worse.
Yeah, absolutely.
When I listen back to that, I think it's so funny that she thought she had like 2 months or something until Rex was due, but of course he actually came really soon after that.
I know, it was like the week after, wasn't it?
Yes.
My favourite bit of that whole podcast was when she, Joe thought that he was buying proper sized shelves.
Yes.
And they were like shelves for elves. She was like, it's shelves for elves. And these shelves that she showed us were like, I don't know, 5 centimetres by 5 centimetres. It was so funny. And Joe kept coming back into the kitchen.
He did.
She's got a really lovely home, really warm.
She has.
Her mum was a ledge.
She's just an all-round amazing, amazing woman.
I think we should get her back on next year.
Yes, please, Stacey, come back on. And finally, I think a chat which really struck a chord with me, actually, because I was pregnant at the time, was with Roxy, and how she spoke about how she was feeling during her pregnancy, and, you know, that whole thing of everyone thinks you're going to be fine when you find out you're pregnant. But for her, it was very different, wasn't it?
Yeah, and Roxy's had like a massive journey. I mean, I hate using that word, but if you follow her on Instagram, you'll see her transformation. I mean, and she wrote a post the other day going, this is not a snapback. That girl has dedicated the last 6 months to being the best mum that she can be and sorting out her mental health and getting to a point where she feels that she can show herself to the world again.
Yeah.
And it's an amazing, wow.
Yeah, I know, exactly.
Yeah.
From the person who came into the studio to now is unbelievable.
Yeah.
Obviously, she's become a mum, and that is the most incredible thing you can do, really, isn't
it? I actually think having the baby has kind of spurred her on, having Wolfie. Yeah, she's wonderful. We love her. Listen, let's get into the Roxy chat.
Well, I met this random Australian on the internet.
Who is actually sat in the room. Not that random.
Yeah. So we met on a dating app, and within, you know, he was on his way back from travelling on his way to Australia. He was here for 4 days. We had a date. He never got on the plane. 10 weeks later, he's like, great, let me go get my visa. Comes back. The day he arrives back, I find out I'm 2 months pregnant. I'm like, well, you're never leaving now.
Wow.
So it was a huge, huge shock. But the reason that I knew I was pregnant was because just before, I had started feeling super low. And I was like, well, this is really weird because work's going really well and I'm in a new relationship and I'm like so loved up and you know what it's like, you're like euphoric. So I was like, is it him? And I was like, maybe I don't like him that much. I was like, no, but I was like, it's weird. And I was like, I'm not feeling good. And I was really tired and I kept napping. And my sister was like, are you sure you're not pregnant? I was like, no, there's absolutely no way.
So this was only 2 months after you'd met Wade.
Yeah. Well, I'm trying to work out because by the time we've had... But by the time it's a year since the day we met, we'll have a one-month-old child.
Okay. Yeah, so, so the time's right. Yeah.
So she was like, you must be pregnant. I was like, there's just no way, because I'd taken the morning after pill on the one occasion.
Yeah.
And was, but anyway, I was pregnant.
But the first sign of your pregnancy was the fact that you felt depressed.
Yes, because I thought there's no reason for me to be depressed. And I was just flat. And I remember we and Wade had gone to the cinema and we watched Star is Born. And afterwards I started crying and he was like, what's wrong? And I was like, I feel like I'm mourning my old life, because I'd done a lot of inner work anyway and I'd been on sort of quite a big personal journey. And I was like, I just feel like I'm not going back to my old life. I don't know why. I was like, it's like a new me.
That's so strange.
Well, even before you knew you were pregnant. Yeah, it was 3 days before I found out.
Wow.
So there was definitely this sense where I had like shifted and something in me had changed and I felt, I don't know, I was having loads of flashbacks of like my like 20s and like my hedonistic like lifestyle. And I was like, God, I've just evolved so much past that and things are so different now. And anyway, and I was saying, yeah, I kept napping, but I thought it was because I'd been working so hard that once I had rested, I had just, my body was just like recuperating. Mm. So yeah, it really wasn't, I really did have no idea. So...
it's actually so interesting hearing you speak about that, because with this pregnancy, I'd actually given up my job a few weeks before. I was pregnant, but I didn't know I was pregnant.
Yeah.
And I was working from home, so I'd sort of shifted like my life, and I was feeling really like just not bothered. Mm. I think that's, I was getting up in the morning and thinking, oh God, and moping around. And I thought that was down to the fact that working from home was just not for me at all. I thought, oh yeah, I mean, this just isn't for me. Like, I'm not this person who wants to just wear leggings and sit at home. I thought I missed getting up and getting dressed and all of that kind of stuff. And then I sort of made a decision to go back to my old job. And then I found out I was pregnant.
Right. It happened like that, didn't it?
It did,
you just weren't yourself for a period of time.
I was not myself. It was only about 4 weeks that I was working from home, but yeah. I thought it was because it was winter and it was dark. I mean, I had all these things in my head that I thought it was, but it wasn't. It was obviously just because I was pregnant.
Yeah.
Right.
And didn't know. But it's really interesting because I don't think many people actually speak about that. I've never heard anyone really talk and say that they felt really down and then they found out they were pregnant.
Well, yeah, I think that's why, because it's quite easy, because when I then suffered really bad prenatal depression, I think if I hadn't have felt depressed first, I would have wondered whether finding out was the cause of feeling low.
Right.
Yeah.
But actually, because I felt low first, I can say, yeah, it was hormones, it was chemical, like there was that side of it, because it went that way around.
So let's talk about prenatal depression, because it isn't a conversation that many people have, and actually, I don't think... many people know, like you said, that they've actually got it. So for you, you know, had you heard about it, what were the signs and what has happened to you during this pregnancy?
So, no, I'd never heard of it, because I'd heard a lot about postnatal depression. And considering I'm a mental health ambassador, you know, you'd think that it would be something I'd be really aware of, but I just wasn't. It just wasn't something that was talked about, you know. And I think there is such a positive view of pregnancy in social media and you know, in films, and it's this glowing period. And I have felt an immense sense of like guilt, because firstly, I wasn't happy when I found out. I was in shock and I wasn't, you know, I didn't really know how to deal with it, and I was sad. And you think, well, you know that how lucky you are to be able to get pregnant. So there's a sense of guilt that comes with that. And then I thought, oh, maybe I'm just adjusting to the change. But because I have suffered depression at times before, I was aware this was much, much deeper than this. And I would say this is probably from when I was, I would say from 8 weeks pregnant to about 20 was the darkest time of my life.
Oh, wow.
It was a real struggle to get out of bed in the morning. All the kind of classic symptoms of depression, lethargy, no feeling of like any hope for the future, extreme sadness, tearfulness. It was really just so intense. Like when I look back at it, it's like a black cloud of time. And if it hadn't been for Wade to like support me through that time, it would have been, I mean, I don't really know what I would have done. But I told my midwife quite early on, and the NHS are amazing because they're very, very sort of aware that this is a big thing, and they really want to help pregnant women. They're like, you know, it's a big, but.
So you flagged it up quite early on.
I flagged it up early. I was like, I'm really not feeling good. But actually, to get an appointment never happened.
Yeah. Mm.
So I was like, oh God, there are so many people struggling who maybe don't have the support system that I had with my friends and my family. And they probably don't even know that they have it.
That's what I was going to say. Like, you're in a position where you're a mental health ambassador, as you say. So you know what the signs are, you know what to look out for. But I bet there's so many women, especially women, as you say, who have either gone through a really big journey to get pregnant. So then it's a huge shock and, you know, it's very overwhelming when they do. Or they didn't plan on getting pregnant, and then that's a huge shock as well.
Yeah,
totally.
Yeah. So I guess for women who you know are pregnant now, and you talked about that guilt, what are the signs? You talked about lethargy, but if anybody's listening and they're like, hang on, is that me?
Yeah, I think it's an extreme sadness which doesn't lift, and it's continuous. So you may get the odd day where you kind of feel good again and you're like, oh, I think I'm better, but it quickly goes back. And it's the consistency of it. That's when it goes from just having like a period of sadness to being really, you know, really suffering from depression and prenatal depression. It's a sense of no hope for the future. It's hopelessness, that gloom, that sort of weight on your chest. I mean, the weight on your shoulders, it's like you genuinely feel it. And at a time where you're supposed to be very excited, and I think that's what makes it all the more kind of obvious in a way, because there's a sense that there is this new life growing inside of you, and there's so much that's going to change, and it's going to be so exciting, and there's so much opportunity for actually to be feeling really good and grateful and happy, and yet you're not feeling any of those things.
Yeah, I think we've both discussed this actually. We've both felt like that on our second babies, that you know you should feel great and you know you should feel really excited, but somehow it just doesn't feel like that.
I mean,
that.
Mine definitely wasn't prenatal depression, but I definitely felt that I wasn't bonding with the bump.
Yeah.
And I wonder if you have experienced that over the last, you know, 8 months, 7 months.
Well, I couldn't get my head around the fact it was real. So we found out the sex straight away. We named him straight away, but just to make it more real.
Do you think that helps?
It definitely helped.
Yeah.
It definitely helped. And now I feel super bonded.
Do you?
But it took, I would say 6 months was my changing point. At 6 months, everything changed. And that's why I really want to talk about this, because I've had a lot of women message me and just say, I'm feeling so low. Like, I don't know what to do, and I'm so glad someone else is feeling the same. And the fact is it does lift. There is a shift, and you can use this. You know, with anything that happens to you, you can either let it, like, you know, overwhelm you, and you can let yourself sort of suffer in it, or you can use it. And I honestly am the strongest, happiest, most content, most grounded I have ever been. And it has been through that sort of darkness, the growth and how much I've evolved. It wouldn't have happened if I didn't suffer that time. Mm. Mm. So, you know, there is opportunity to really make there's something beautiful for you and give you that strength before you become a mum. Mm. Like, I feel ready to be a mum now because of this experience.
So many things to take from that podcast. Such a great person, such a brilliant energy, and just I feel like loads of people will listen to that and go, oh my God, actually that's how I'm feeling. I need to do something about it. My mental health isn't great.
Yeah. And do you know what? I've really found on that day, her and her partner are such a team. Mm. And I think they still are now. Mm. And it's lovely to think that they were thrown into parenthood and they're just acing it.
I saw them at an event and she said to me, I've bought my new, well, it's our third date and I've brought him with me today. And I was like, oh my God. And I was like, who is it? And she was like, that hunky Australian over there. And he was supposed to fly back to Oz and he ended up staying. And you could see the chemistry was like, psh.
Yeah.
Flash forward 2 weeks, she was pregnant.
Mental.
Imagine that.
It
is. You're not ever going back to Australia ever. And we can't, look, there were so many other amazing moments of this year, but there's one moment that cannot go undetected and it cannot go amiss. We have to appreciate the moment where Natalie Lee got my dearest Georgia to look her in the eyes and say this.
Look in my eyes and say wanking. Just one more time.
No, don't make me do that. Yes. Wanking.
Yes!
Never, ever going to live that down, ever. And I'm never, ever saying it again.
Look at me in the eyes right now and say wanking.
No, I won't. I won't. I'm not going to rise to this.
Georgia, you're such a good sport. You're such a good sport. That, what I want to do with that is turn that into my ringtone.
When I wanking. Call you.
Wanking.
Well, when
wanking.
I buzzed on the door today, that's what Imo said to me.
Wanking.
Seriously.
No, it's brilliant. You're amazing. I love you. What a great year we've had.
Yeah, and no wanking in 2020.
I will be wanking a lot in 2020. Have a fantastic new year. As always, please rate, review and subscribe to the podcast. You can give us a little 5-star as well. And of course,
please drop us a message at Made by Mamas or on Zoe's own channel at Zoe Hardman. And we will see you next year.
Have a fantastic New Year's Eve. We'll see you soon.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.